This is what's commonly known as a big inside voice.
Just introduce us again.
It just felt like we were
Yeah. Okay. Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the cheerfully young, wildly hip, and gracefully lay editors of American Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, joined by Zach Davis.
Hello, everyone.
And Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
So subdued, Zach.
I know. Yeah. It's really unlike
you. Did you just get in trouble for screaming into the microphone? Yes. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. It's a short
week. I didn't get you guys sick or anything.
You got me sick.
Yes. Ashley, I've been coughing all day today.
I'm sorry.
I'm sick as much as my demeanor reveals otherwise.
It's why you're so subdued.
Yes. Yep. All right. Well, we're going to power through this episode. And then Zach will go sleep. But before you sleep, you have to drink something, Zach. And what's on tap?
Oh, yes. We are today drinking Bekarovka. Bekarovka, in case that's deemed too offensive in the original, in the edits. My Soviet impression. We are drinking Bekarovka, which our engineer, Colleen, decided to bring in for us because she, when she was studying abroad, was friends with this priest who was like, you have to try this drink. And it's a Czech after-dinner digestif.
So yeah. Cheers.
So cheers.
Yep, I haven't had any yet.
Sure, Zach.
Oh. Cinnamony.
Yeah, no, it tastes like Christmas.
I feel like it's a secret. It's a secret it's like recipe. Secret. Yeah. We tried looking up what's in it. We don't know. But
it's like liquid Big Red.
Yeah. Like more classy Jägermeister. I'm going to come down on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're not looking to do Jaeger bombs anymore, you're looking to come out of that phase in your life, check out Bekarovka.
All right. And who's our guest, Olga?
Today, we're chatting with Alex Nava, who's the author of In Search of Soul, Hip Hop, Literature, and Religion. And he's also a professor at the University of Arizona, where he focuses on the power of rap music for African-American and Latinx communities. So we'll be chatting with him about two of my favorite things, hip hop music and religion.
Ah, excellent. Mm-hmm.
And then after, we've got our Consolations and Desolations, a part of the show where we get real vulnerable and tell you where we did or didn't find God this week.
Excellent. But now it's Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. Zach, tell us about this Czech story.
This what story?
Czech story.
There you go.
Oh, my Lord.
Story coming out of the Czech Republic. The Catholic Church is branching out into forestry, and that is a pun. So basically, the church had its land seized under communism in the Czech Republic. And in 2012, they were awarded 140,000 hectares of woodland, $4 billion worth of property, making them the country's largest landowner.
Wow.
So very interesting. And so now that they have all this land and cash, they're looking at new ways of ensuring their long-term financial stability. And so one of those ways is getting into the lumberjacking forestry industry. And this also sort of relates to
last week's episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is the church doing with its land holdings in order to, yes. Besides forestry, the church is also interested in brewing because the Czech Republic is the world's top beer drinking consumption per capita country.
Oh, wow.
In the world.
Wow.
I did not know that.
So there are a handful of church run micro breweries.
Cool. Interesting. Which brings us to our next story, right?
Indeed. There are a group of monks in Italy, in the region of Norcia, Italia, mm-hmm. That was hit by a devastating earthquake.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that.
And so right now, there are a group of Benedictine monks who are coming up with some brews, and they're trying to rebuild the monastery in the town with quite literally their own beer money.
Nice. Wow.
Which for me, I tweeted this earlier in the week, but this is the definition of a Signs of the Times story. Yeah. For Jesuitical, right? Like monks brewing beer to pay for a damaged monastery.
Yeah.
Doesn't get any better than that. And it was picked up by NPR.
Speaking of perfect SOT stories for Jesuitical,
yeah, really.
Sister Maria Valentina will be performing for Pope Francis while he's in Colombia this week. But it's not the usual performance. She's going to be rapping since she moonlights as a rapper.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
She's bad. I'm going to say it.
Oh.
She's not good.
Aww. Yeah, I mean, she's not but Kendrick Lamar or Chance, but she's got spirit and she's a nun who raps. Like, this is just so perfect.
I know.
Yes. So Pope Francis is going to Colombia this week, September 6th to the 11th. Colombia has just reached a peace deal after a more than 50-year civil war, one of the longest-running mm-hmm. conflicts in the world. So he's going there to show his support for peace. He was flying there today and asked for everyone's prayers for continued peace in that country.
Yeah, and if you're interested in what the Pope is doing in Colombia, check out our Vatican correspondent on Twitter, Jerry O'Connell. And so America will have stuff all week. Yeah. So.
Yes, we will. This seems like another made-for-SOT story. a man and his fiance had a private audience with Pope Francis last week. Mm-hmm. And right when they were, like, shaking hands, exchanging gifts with Pope Francis, he dropped on one knee and proposed to her.
Yeah, and she was flabbergasted.
She was. Pope Francis actually had to tell her, like, hey, you have to answer the question, of which she, of course, said yes, but... Yeah. How do you get better than this? Like, your proposal already involved Pope Francis. What's the point of even having a wedding?
Okay, that's true. But also, you can't say no in that situation. So it's kind of like...
You can't?
Can you?
You absolutely can. And in fact, one of my favorite things to do, and this is probably building up a ton of, like, terrible karma, is to go on YouTube and search failed proposals.
Oh, Lord. Why? That is so. I've seen a few, and they're so cringeworthy. I don't know how you can enjoy just watching them again. And
I think
again
they're hilarious. Because like,
how are they hilarious?
Because they're always in sports arenas.
Yeah,
not true. Always. A lot of the times they're in sports arenas, and so it's kind of like, why? Two, if you're gonna do a huge public thing like that, you should know.
Yeah,
it should not be.
You should be 100% sure that your significant other is on board. Because this is embarrassing. Or are you only doing it because you think it's the only way they'll say yes? Like you're cornering them, so to speak?
but in conclusion, heartbreak is hilarious.
Yeah, no.
Zach, oh my God, do not throw that out into the universe.
After my brother proposed to his girlfriend during the total eclipse of the sun in front of all of my aunts and uncles.
But what if she would have said
I'm
no?
I'm gonna have to defend the public proposal.
But what if she would have said no and you were filming it? Would you have posted it on YouTube?
No,
but I think that's different. Like family versus an entire sports arena. Right.
Yes. All right. Next Pope Francis story. In a new book-length interview with
430 something pages,
a very, very long book interview with a French intellectual, Pope Francis talks about how in his years as a Jesuit in Buenos Aires, he consulted a psychoanalyst for, you know, just like what anyone goes to a therapist for. He thought he needed some professional help.
Right. Yeah, and this was like really refreshing to see. Yeah. To see like, I mean, we've had some stories in America about Catholics going to therapy that have mm-hmm. really resonated with people because sometimes I think it's seen as like a failure or like, why don't you just go to confession?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and to see someone not only like a high up Catholic, but of that generation where mm-hmm. it was even less accepted than it is now is, I think, a very important witness to have from the Pope.
From the freaking Pope.
From mm-hmm. the Pope. Yes.
And you had a really, what was your tweet about this?
Well, yeah, you did have a really good tweet about this.
Okay, so in the same interview, Pope Francis talks about the different influences in his life in Argentina, and he talks about not only his mom, of course, who is a strong influence, and his therapist, who happened to be Jewish, but also a communist woman who was the founder of the Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo, mothers whose children had been disappeared or killed in the dirty war in Argentina. So, yes, my tweet was, behind every pope is a powerful mother, a Jewish therapist, and a communist woman.
Not bad.
But Pope Francis was surprisingly not the biggest news of this week, despite his trip to Colombia. That title goes to Donald Trump.
Unsurprisingly.
Unsurprisingly, I guess. So this week he announced Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the decision to end DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that protected undocumented immigrants who were brought to this country as children.
And people like our second guest of the show, mm-hmm. Jorge Corona.
Yes. Some context for this. The law was going to be challenged by 10 state attorney generals. The deadline they gave the president was September 5th. It was going to expire in March of 2018. Trump decided to end it before then and basically said, Congress, the ball is in your court. If you want these people to be protected, then you need to pass legislation like the DREAM Act.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like a shoot the hostage situation to me.
Mm-hmm. Like if you what don't, do you mean by that?
So it's going to expire in 6 months, which then, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are going to be eligible for deportation, mm-hmm. who have willingly surrendered mm-hmm. their information to the government.
And the Catholic response, as expected, has been pretty swift and explicit. Father Tim Kosicki, who was the president of the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States, came out with a really powerful letter where he wrote, "While you and the estimated 750,000 among you are called dreamers, you have helped us dream too." So it's, you know, a lot of, they feel really uncertain, but it's good, as always, to see this kind of response. And I don't know what else we can do right now except kind of pray and hope for the best following this.
Yeah, and hope
pray and pressure Congress. Pray, to do
pressure,
their job.
Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah, all the.
Call our local representatives.
And all of the church has been like very unified in this condemnation. Michael Lachlan pointed out that both the president, vice president of the Bishops' Conference, and all of the committee heads, like all signed this statement denouncing, which is a very forceful and rare denunciation of a political move. And so hopefully, you know, you have Catholic university presidents speaking out against this. So hopefully this is a chance for the church to reach across partisan lines and really stand up for these 800,000 kids who brought here when they were kids and in many cases are still kids.
Yeah, and who are Americans, you know, their lives have been formed here.
Yep.
So we're pleased to welcome Alex Nava, author of In Search of Soul, Hip-Hop, Literature, and Religion. Welcome to Jesuitical, Alex.
Thanks. I'm excited to be with you.
Yeah, we're very excited to talk to you. So first question, what was the first hip-hop album you listened to?
I remember when Rapper's Delight came out, and I just remember the...
Who's the artist on that album? Ask for a friend.
I was just nodding along like, right?
Famous Sugar Hill Gang.
Right.
And Rapper's Delight was just the first commercial success and had an amazing reach, became very successful around the world, actually. And
yeah, Ashley, you've definitely heard it. It's like a wedding.
I know. I was just helping the listeners out.
Okay.
I had an immediate fascination and love of the spoken word, the way in which the rhythms, the rhymes coming off the rappers' tongues was almost immediately, you know, intriguing. But I would say that when I was in school, in college, in the 90s, I started to really pay attention more to the narratives, to the stories. I was in Chicago for school, and the University of Chicago was on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, at the time, it was like kind of the heyday of rap, and you had all of these extraordinary artists, Tupac and Nas and Wu-Tang and a lot of the classic figures. And in many ways, what really struck me is that I found a lot of what they were saying really relevant to the world in which I was living. And I don't want to make it out like I was in a total hood because
what
the University
were you
of Chicago.
Studying at the University of Chicago?
I was studying religion.
And so, yeah, what were the connections you saw between that music and what was going on in the streets of the South Side and what you were studying?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I always remember this one class. I had a sociology class, and it was interesting, and I loved learning. So, but they were talking about, like, we were reading Max Weber and Tocqueville and Marx, and it was very, very abstract. And I felt like, in many ways, my education was missing something about the world that was just a stone's throw away from the University of Chicago. In other words, they were completely ignoring some of the struggles of ghetto life around the university. And this was a class on sociology. So I guess what I felt is that the genre of rap has more educational potential than the great University of Chicago. And I mean, in many ways, the experience at the UC was amazing. And for a first generation kid, like, my parents didn't go to college. And so it was just like, wow, this is like a feast of ideas. And I loved it. But I also recognized that there are limitations to academic discourse, to academic world. A lot of times it really, they start, you know, they have conversations with each other and they don't reach a lot of times beyond the walls of the university.
Now you actually, you took hip hop and brought it into the classroom, right? Like because you started teaching a course on this, right? Can you talk a little bit about the backstory behind getting that started?
So when I got my first job at the University of Arizona, I was like, there's classes on rock and roll, there's classes on jazz, nobody is doing anything on hip hop. So I created a class, it's now been more than 10 years. You know, at first I had a hard time convincing them that it was worth studying. And now, you know, there are now hundreds of classes in major universities dealing with hip hop. So it's really been kind of an explosive growth in the area of hip hop studies. But
that's interesting to me because I think I grew up surrounded by hip hop music and it was always intertwined with my faith life, the faith life of the people around me. So why do you think so many people see these two things as being at odds with each other?
Yeah, that's really interesting that you, even at an early age, just saw them as interconnected.
Shout out
you
to know, the Bronx. I mean, it's because I'm from the Bronx. I'm from its birthplace. So it's easier
jealous.
For me.
You're from the Bronx.
I was wondering how long we would get into this conversation before Olga would point that out.
Totally established.
I am throwing up my X symbols right now.
So the issue about like the conflict between religion, I mean, on the one hand, I actually think, of course, there are points in which there are clear conflicts. And, you know, I mean, in some of the worst aspects of hip hop, you have like this glorification of materialism and not just materialism, but like hedonism where pleasure is the ultimate value.
Would you say the same thing of violence in hip hop?
Exactly. To me, that's like one of the most disturbing aspects is, you know, at times when the rise of so-called gangster hip hop became really started like talking about guns and weapons and murder in very kind of casual ways. And I mean, again, this was a time when a lot of this was very real of what was happening in parts of urban America where, you know, it was, there was amazing, you know, upsurges in violence. And so in many ways, it's, on the one hand, they were like expressing as almost like a reporter would do of kind of reporting on what was happening in their world. But the other time there definitely was some romanticizing of the gangster image. So anyway, that there's clearly are. And then of course, as you've heard that like sexism. And so I mean, there are points of obviously conflict and contradiction and,
but what would you convince someone like to maybe not ignore that, but even recognizing that, why should hip hop be taken seriously, and especially with conversations of religion?
So I think the vision that Jesus had of compassion for the poor and for the marginalized, for the outcast, I don't think it's like an option if you're Christian, but I think it's absolutely incumbent upon us. It's one of the fundamental tenets of Christian belief to respond with concern for on behalf of the neglected and the deprived. And I think at its very best, hip hop does in fact try to represent and speak on behalf of those in the margins of American life.
I agree. I think that you have a point. Like there are many aspects of hip hop that are problematic, but there is also, it's also very heavily infused with Christian themes. I mean, Jay-Z's first album, he has a song called The Evils, where he's literally talking to God and talking about the struggles that he's going through, you know? Eric B. and Rakim and A Tribe Called Quest, they're always talking about faith and like these positive elements. So I think that's why for me, I'm always like, yeah, hip hop is very violent, but there's also this something so, so human and Christian. Exactly. Like, sure. There are so many things that, like, I see in the Bible that I've seen in hip-hop lyrics, you know?
Yeah. You know what? The best artists, they are, in fact, themselves criticizing. So there's, like, internal criticism in hip-hop of, like, some of the materialistic tendencies, mm-hmm. or the sexism. You have that in great artists. The famous line from Jesus, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Kendrick Lamar, he has that remarkable song about how much a dollar costs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's on To Pimp a Butterfly.
Right.
And it's this amazing, like, story. He is speaking somewhat autobiographically, is like he's as the wealthy rapper in a nice car, and mm-hmm. he encounters this homeless person. And he's having this conversation with this homeless person. And the first temptation, like all of us have, is to, you know, kind of judge and criticize and find a reason for to kind of blame his own situation. And he has this conversation with him. And in fact, he says that, you know, he smells like moonshine and gin. You're babbling. And then it's like, as the song goes on, at the end, there's this like extraordinary revelation that this homeless person speaks to him. And he says, have you ever opened up Exodus 14? And then the next line is, a humble man is all we ever need.
Mm-hmm.
So Exodus 14 is like the story of the Israelites fleeing slavery. And when the Pharaoh and the hardening of the Pharaoh's heart and everything. So I take it as like, you know, the Pharaoh there clearly represents like a figure of extraordinary arrogance and power. At the end, he actually says, where it's really crystal clear, that the homeless person says, you're looking at the Messiah.
Yeah. Right.
So it's kind of this idea that God or Jesus appears in the face of the poor and the vulnerable and the homeless. Yeah. And that is straight out of Matthew 25.
Yeah.
Like, I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, I was a stranger and you welcomed me. So I think that that song is a meditation on a passage like that. And it really captures the spirit of the scriptures.
Was also Obama's favorite song in 2015.
Yeah, there we go.
So our final question for you is, if you could canonize anyone, living or dead, Catholic or non-Catholic, who would it be? And I hope it's someone.
Oh,
I won't lead you, but I hope it's hip-hop related. But I won't judge you if it's not.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I have to choose Tupac.
Okay.
I mean, I think Tupac was very much like a Job figure, the book
nice.
Of Job.
Wow,
he was wrestling with God in light of human suffering. And he was a brooding, troubled artist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and they don't all have to be. I think somebody like Chance the Rapper, I mean, who is more positive and optimistic and, you know, joyful. We need that too. We need both.
Right, right.
We need both sides. But yeah, I'd have to go with Tupac.
Great. We approve. So Alex, thank you so much for talking to us. And if people want to find your new book, In Search of Soul, Hip Hop, Literature, and Religion, where can they find this?
Besides Amazon.
Besides Amazon, right.
Or your other work.
Or you can go directly to the University of California Press.
Got it. Great. Thanks so much for talking with us, Alex. This has been fun.
All right. Thanks, you guys. It was great. Great talking.
All righty.
Bye.
All right. Now it's time for some listener feedback. We put out a Twitter poll this week in light of the public proposal in front of Pope Francis and asked, would you like to propose/be proposed to in public? And we got some responses.
We did. Allison said, as long as family and friends are included and it's not just a bunch of random passerbys, then yeah, sure.
Jake wrote in, I propose on the slope and among the grapes of a vineyard in VA. Enjoy your moment because it vanishes so quickly. Private in a public place.
And Kendall Reese said, absolutely not.
Roberto said, nope, I only wanted me and Sarah there. I'm assuming that's his now wife or fiance. It feels weird to have other people there, even if you already know the answer.
Yeah, and John wrote in, I did, but I waited until no one was looking in our direction. So yes and no?
And then my... This was an important question. Anthony said, it depends on the location. I'm thinking about doing it in nature, so I think one should qualify what public means.
Yeah, I mean like people around.
It's right? Very personist of you.
Strangers.
I want deers all around me when I get proposed to.
Do you want public? Public or not, Olga?
No, public only, like, my family can be there, but definitely not strangers. Right. It's weird.
Ashley?
Fiance and animals.
Fiance and animals. I'm going to say undecided.
All right. Now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of the show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God.
Basically, we're trying to be Catholic.
Pretty much.
And we're here to tell you guys about it.
Pretty much. We should just rename that this section.
All right, Zach, how did you try to be Catholic this week?
Well, I took up a corporal work of mercy.
So,
me and my girlfriend Amanda were planning on going away for the long weekend, not anywhere like crazy or anything, because... we made plans late, but hopefully upstate somewhere. I don't know. But Amanda got sick, and so basically ended up doing not a lot. And I took on the role of medicine getter and food cooker and drink changer outer. And so the reason I brought this as my consolation, one, you know, caring for the sick, caring for someone that's ill, I think it's something a lot of people can relate to. I'm looking forward to being cared for here in a little bit because I'm about to, I am now sick. But also, like, yes, plans were canceled, but it also made me realize that being in that role and just doing nothing but being around her, I like her. And that
the plans were, the place you were going was, you know, just to be with her.
Right.
So you were with her anyways.
So feeling connected to her despite, you know, what seemed like bad circumstances was my consolation.
That's beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah.
What about you, Ashley?
So I have a desolation this week, and... I feel like I was looking back on our episodes and I've had like consolations for the past 6 weeks. So I didn't want people to get the idea that
everything's great.
Everything's great because it's not. It's just a lot easier to talk about the great things.
That's right, true. Right. That's so true.
So this weekend I went down to Arlington, which I still call home, which is part of the desolation, I guess. And coming back on the bus, my dad drove me to the bus back to New York, and we had a really heartfelt conversation, which is a rarity for McKinless's. We don't like talking about our feelings.
And but then, car rides. I mean,
yeah, car rides. Yeah.
Brings it out in people.
And then I got on the bus, and just, the girl next to me, I feel sorry for her, because I was just like crying the entire bus ride back.
Oh, Lord.
And it was just like... I never got homesick in college because, like, it was 4 years. I knew I'd be coming back. But now I'm about to reach 4 years in New York, and I don't know when I'm going back. Because so there's plenty of consolations that I have in New York. I love my job. I love my roommates and all these things. But then it's also, like, I miss having the, like, security and safety and just, like, assured love of being with my family.
Yeah.
And I felt that very strongly this past Labor Day weekend, and then leaving it was harder this time than usual. And so that was, so I guess the desolation was like feeling kind of exposed, like alone in New York and uncertain about like how long that's going to last.
Right.
If, you know, if I'm supposed to go back to those roots or if I should plant new roots here. So that was the desolation. So yeah, what about you, Olga?
So I've got a consolation this week. Speaking of proposals, all of our sections have just flowed from one to another. One of my best friends, who I've known since I started at Fordham 10 years ago, proposed to his girlfriend last Friday. And I've just like been with him since the start of this relationship, to the planning. He took her to the Cayman Islands. He was so nervous that he threw up while they were in the beach, and she was like, "What's wrong with you?" And he had this,
"Everything's fine."
Yeah, he had like this whole speech plan. He threw up in the water, got out, and was like, "I love you. You made me the happiest man ever. Will you marry me?" And she said yes, and he FaceTimed me and told me all of these things. And it was just, I don't, like, for me, this is hella corny. I'm aware of this. But for me, just like seeing God in love has just been something that's like in my own relationship, in my relationship with my family, even like in us doing this podcast, yeah. like that is just such a concrete sign of God's presence. And then just experiencing two people who, it's not just puppy love, like they got together when they were like 22 and then seeing them become these adults who are going to build a future together. That was just really consoling for me. And I'm a romantic, so yeah.
Were there people around when he was proposing?
Yeah, apparently there were other people on, not that he wanted, he's very private. Yeah. But the only other person involved was his dog, who was actually the one
animals,
who and animals. Also, he checked off all of the McKinley's necessities. But yeah, it was just super consoling because it wasn't about me. It was just about this person, these two people. And I just see God in relationships, and I love both of them, and I'm so happy to see them start their life together.
I don't think that's
corny. Thank you.
Wasn't your consolation last week your
brother getting proposing?
So I'm due for someone to get engaged in my life.
Yeah. Listeners, listeners, if you want to publicly propose to your significant other on Twitter. It'll make us
tag Jesuitical.
Tag Jesuitical, include us, and it'll be our consolation.
If you want us, if you want us to be there,
yeah,
we would love a Jesuitical couple.
Oh yeah, totally. We could MC your wedding. Honestly, just gonna put that out there.
All right, and with that, we will wrap up. Jesuitical is brought to you by American Media and produced by Eloise Bondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup SJ. Adult supervision provided by Sam Sawyer SJ. Engineering by Colleen Dully. Adverbs by Rachel Carey. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli, and you can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts and leave us a review. This week, two new reviews from AMK864 and Anna Mar KZ. I wonder who that is.
But I will point out that AMK said, plus listening to Zach sing always makes me giggle.
All right. Well, everything makes me giggle, so that's not high praise.
Easy. It sounded like it was high praise.
You don't think, were you not suspicious that AMK was me? Oh. Ashley Mick? It wasn't. And send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americamedia.org. For American Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Olga Segura. We'll see you next week.